Hello, I'm Victoria Shepherd for WILL, and this is the Mid-American Gardener podcast, where we love to talk about anything connected to gardening in central Illinois. Bugs seem to be very popular right now. For the last episode of this podcast, I spoke with the beneficial bug lady, Kelly Alsop, about butterflies. We're now at episode 15, and I am fortunate enough to sit down today, back in Studio A, with another of our amazing Mid-American Gardener panelists, Phil Nixon. Phil is a retired entomologist of the University of Illinois Extension, where he had statewide responsibilities for pesticide safety education and the integrated pest management of landscape and household insect pests. Phil and his wife, Carrie, live in rural Tolono, where they maintain a vegetable garden, flower garden, fruit orchard, and a number of water gardens. They also have plantings of butterfly, bee, and bird plant foods, as well as enough trees to make the house almost invisible. They maintain mason bees to pollinate their fruit trees and grow bonsai. Hello, Phil.
Howdy.
Wow, that sounds like you have a lot going on at your house.
Yeah, people ask me, you know, what are you doing in your retirement? Well, I think you get a handle on what I'm doing in my retirement.
No one can see you from the street, right?
From one direction.
And is it out? Do you have a lot of acreage? Do you have a lot of land out there?
We have 3.5 acres. It's essentially an enlarged farmstead.
And it's all very established. You've been there for a while?
31 years, yeah.
And when were you at the University Extension? How long were you working at the University?
I worked at the University for 37 years, starting out in the Chicago metropolitan area for 7 years, and then moved to campus in 1987. So,
I'm always very envious of people who have been in jobs or with companies for many years. I feel that nowadays, people don't seem to stay in the same place for so long.
Well, it's easier to stay in one place when there's not very many of your type of jobs in the country. So once you find one, you better stay.
Now, talking of which, how did you get into entomology? What gave you the bug, basically?
Well, as a child, I was always interested in going down and across the little town I grew up in central Illinois, there was a pond that had been originally dug for water for steam locomotives. And I would go down across town and go to that fairly often just to see what I could find. When I was probably about 10 or 11 years old, I got a jar of water and studied and identified most of what showed up in it from that pond. And that kind of got me going. And I took entomology and 4-H. Because I was a biology major in community college and was taking entomology there. So I thought I'll kill two birds with one stone. When I went to Southern Illinois University for my bachelor's degree, I had to pick a major as an undergraduate or an area of expertise. And I was interested in fish or ichthyology and reptiles and amphibians or herpetology and entomology or insects. And I liked fish for more of a hobby, which I'm an aquarist now with 40 aquaria in our house. I really found insects and reptiles and amphibians interesting. And comparatively, there were a huge number of jobs in entomology compared to reptiles and amphibians. So I went to entomology.
Wow. So were you collecting a lot of tadpoles when you were young?
Yeah, in fact, when I took a public speaking course in community college, I did it with a jar of live tadpoles and a live snake. On my 5 to 7 minute talk, I couldn't hardly figure out how I could possibly fill 7 minutes with all the reptiles and amphibians in the world. And now, of course, it can take me 7 minutes just to introduce myself to give a talk. So.
Well, we love having you on the show because we always get to learn something, and I always get to learn something doing these podcasts. So I thought it would be interesting today because we've received quite a few emails from viewers wanting to know about some possibly weird and hopefully wonderful insects that have appeared in their gardens. I thought it would be quite fun to talk about these and find out what some of the benefits are of these bugs if they are beneficial in any way. Cindy wrote to us to find out about a mysterious beetle, she called it, that appeared in her garden. It's predominantly black and has some red markings, and it's been eating her flowers. She'd love to know how to get rid of them, if she should get rid of them. Do you have any ideas?
Well, I looked at the pictures that she sent in, and they were a stink bug, a very small one. It's only about a 3/16 of an inch long or so. It's a relatively small stink bug, about a third the size of most stink bugs. And it's only known by its genus name, which is Cosmopepla. There is no common name for it, but it's a quite interesting insect. Occurs on flowers and other herbaceous plants. It's a native insect, and it's going to feed on seeds of various types of plants and will suck out some juices, but normally isn't numerous enough to cause any real harm. So the bottom line is she actually has a very pretty insect when her flowers aren't in bloom. It can actually be more attractive than the green plant by itself, and it's not going to really cause any real harm.
So she doesn't need to worry about it and not necessarily remove it.
That's right. I mean, let sleeping bugs lie, so to speak.
Okay, well, hopefully, Cindy, that has helped you and nothing to worry about. Emily, on the other hand, from DeMott, Indiana, has some flying bugs all over her yard, and she'd love to know what they are. Can you help her with those?
Well, from her picture that she sent in, it's a green June beetle, and green June beetles are kind of interesting insects. They're a scarab beetle, which is in the same family as dung beetles and the beetles that feed on the white grubs that feed
on our
grass.
They have the little pincers, right?
No, those are stag beetles.
Ah,
different family. Related closely, but different family. It's rather interesting. These insects are approximately an inch long, and they're normally bright green, although the picture that Emily sent in was one that was kind of a bronzy, coppery looking, which they sometimes are, but more commonly are green with some yellow bands down the side of the body. And on the underneath side, there are a myriad of metallic green, blue, and red colors. They're really quite interesting in appearance. And they come out around the middle part of the summer, and I like to say that they fly with what I like to call reckless abandon. They will fly wherever they want to go. In fact, I think they have a tendency to tend to fly at people somewhat sometimes. The larvae will live on dead grass, and we get them coming out of thatchy lawns with a lot of thatch in them, particularly underneath trees. And the larvae have an interesting habit of coming out at night and crawling around. And they have very short legs, but very long, seedy or hairs on their back, spine-like hairs. And in order to get around, they actually flip onto their back and crawl on their back.
Really?
Like an inchworm. And these insects, as a larvae, get up to about close to 2 inches long. And so I've actually gotten calls before in the past of people who are going out in their yard, walking around barefoot, and getting upset about stepping on these things and squishing them between their toes. Of course, my reaction I wanted to give, although I don't think I did, was don't walk around in your yard barefoot at night where you can't see where you're stepping. But whatever, you know, the case may be. But at any rate, they've come out as adult beetles, and I actually had some coming out of a manure pile from the horses that my wife has. And I noticed that while I was out there, I was hearing this thunk, thunk, thunk. And I looked up, and these beetles were flying into the side of the barn.
Oh,
Hard. Hard enough that when they hit the barn, they would bounce back about 15 or 20 feet, and they'd be knocked out cold. And they'd sit there, and after a while, they'd be on their back, and you could see their tarsi start to move, which is bug talk for feet, toes. And then they'd start to flick their wings a little bit and get themselves turned over. And I watched this one beetle several times, and like for four times in a row, and a couple others did the same thing. When they woke up and got up, sometimes they'd fly commonly away from the barn, but I didn't see them make a big horseshoe shape and bam, right into the barn again.
Now, why? What could possibly be the reason for them doing that? Do you know?
I have no idea, except maybe they just like to have their brain scrambled.
I just wondered if there was a light or something?
Well, it was a white barn, but that shouldn't have been all that attractive to them. It was the middle of the day. It was sunshiny. It may have been that they were thinking that it was the lightest area to fly to. I don't know what. But, you know, it's
interesting.
Kind of an interesting thing. And they're a good-sized beetle. If they hit you, they'll kind of bowl you over. I had where I was growing up, I had one fly into my forehead one time and had a little red spot on my forehead for a couple of days.
Ooh, what sort of size do they get to?
About an inch long.
Oh, they are.
Half an inch wide, and they are bulky. I mean, they are husky beetles.
Oh, so if Emily's got a lot flying around her yard, it could be quite dangerous.
Well, but on the other hand, because they only eat dead grass, they really don't cause any harm. They're just eating the dead grass that's in the turf. Or might be coming out of a pile of grass clippings. And, of course, the answer there is you compost your grass clippings. They just pile them up. Or not collect them in the first place, just scatter them out, mm-hmm. mulch them in as you mow. So they're really not going to be a real problem to anything to any great extent. Occasionally you'll get some dieback of grass just simply because as a larva you're working around, they kind of loosen the roots and then the grass gets a little poor looking. But, you know, generally not a real problem, particularly since they tend to be underneath trees where it's shady and it's a little more moist usually there.
And do these normally come out more fly at a certain time of day, or are they're just around, or they go to bed at night or what?
They're sun worshippers.
Ah.
They're going to be out in the sunniest parts of the day. From what I've been able to see and from what my phone calls have indicated over the years, from about 10 in the morning to about 3 or 4 in the afternoon. So the sunniest parts of the day is when they're out. They seem to be really like the sun, whereas most insects will like the shade. So it's unusual to find one likes the sun.
Well, Emily, you'll have to run your errands during the day and then come back later when the sun's gone in. Now, talking of these, the green June beetles and the stink bugs, what sort of lifespan are we talking about for these bugs?
Well, it depends on how warm it is and how much food there is. Essentially, most of these will probably be adult insects for 3 to 6 weeks.
And then
to get to that point, the green June beetles are taking a year as a larva, sometimes 2 years. And the stink bug, is probably going to take about 8 weeks or so to grow up. And then very likely the last generation, there would be probably 3 generations or so a year. The last generation of that insect probably overwinters as an adult. So
okay.
One generation would actually live for 6 months, 8 months, whereas the others would live more like 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay. And the larvae for these, are they anything that people need to be concerned about, or they just let them be and let
let sleeping bugs lie.
Okay. Now, our final question that we've got from a viewer that I have a feeling we're going to have a bit of a different response from Marilyn from Hillsborough. She has some very strange bugs that she'd like to identify. And from the photo, they look like something out of a computer game, I thought. Could you talk a little bit about those and what Marilyn has got in her yard?
Okay, what she has are saddleback caterpillars. And they're essentially a brown caterpillar, moth larva, that will top out at about a half an inch long. So they don't get real large, maybe 3/4 of an inch at the most. And they're brownish in color. And they have a bright green pattern on their back, which looks just like a saddle that you would put on a horse.
Right. Okay.
And I could say it's kind of a cross between English and a cavalry saddle. It's like an English saddle and it does not have a horn.
Yes.
But it's like a cavalry saddle in that it's open in the center of a back.
Yes. So, I mean, they're very, very...
I told you my wife's into horses, so...
By the way, what animals do you have? Because you have quite a few animals, right?
You don't want to list here that we have various types of birds. My wife raises canaries and some parrots and some parakeets and some things like this. Like I said, I have 40 aquariums of fish, and I tend to raise primarily native fish from the southeastern U.S., primarily what are known as native killifish or top minnows. and minnows, and they're quite colorful. These are things that I normally collect myself and go out and collect. And then we have four cats right now, and two horses and a pony, and
wow.
She still has a few rabbits left. It's half a dozen chickens. Let me see.
That's a full-time job in itself, taking care of all those animals.
Yeah, you don't schedule my wife for anything before 10:30 in the morning because she's busy doing her chores. So
now, cleaning your aquariums, that must be a full-time job, though.
No, I'm a lazy fair aquarist.
Oh.
It normally takes me about 15 minutes, 20 minutes a day to feed all my fish. And then I grow a lot of plants in the aquarium, mm-hmm. which use up a lot of the nitrogenous waste produced by the fish. So I'm cycling the aquariums and have filters in them. And so I don't do water changes near as often as many people do, or probably that I should. But considering I go out and collect my fish and I see what kind of nasty water
they come from,
I tend to have a little more leeway there as some people do.
As a quick reminder, you're listening to the Mid-American Gardener podcast, which is available for streaming at midamericangardener.org. This and past episodes are also available through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and the NPR One app. If you haven't done so already, please do subscribe, review, and rate with abandon. Getting your feedback will help us improve what we're doing and give you information that is not just useful, but entertaining. Now back to the podcast.
Well, going back to Marilyn and her saddleback beetles.
Caterpillars.
Saddleback caterpillars. Sorry. Do they turn into saddleback butterflies?
No.
Oh.
They turn into saddleback moths.
Ah.
But they don't have a saddleback when they're a moth. They're kind of a brown moth with some darker brown areas on their wings and really nondescript. But in addition to the brown and caterpillar and the green saddle, mm-hmm. they also have things that look like horns sticking out on them that have little poisonous spines on the outside.
And Marilyn had said one of her friends she thought was bitten or stung.
These are in the family of the stinging caterpillars, and it's the most common member of it. Most of the other stinging caterpillars, at least that occur in Illinois, are deep forest tree feeders. So the average person doesn't run across them. But this one, I've had cases of them being on houseplants indoors and on various types of plants outside. They have a very large host range, and they're not tremendously common, but they do definitely sting. I had a case when I was a graduate school in Southern Illinois that I found one of these and caught it and put it, to show my age, I put it on a film canister. Younger people won't know what a film canister is, but it's for 35 millimeter film, and it's about 2 inches long and an inch wide. And you would carry those. I was taking pictures, so I had one of those, and I put it into there. And I, unbeknownst to me, I happened to scrape off a few little spines onto the edge of that, put it in my pocket in my jeans, and noticed in a few minutes that I had this tingling sensation on my leg.
Oh, no.
And being out in the middle of nowhere in Southern Illinois, I dropped my pants to look at it. Not another person in 5 miles from me. And the whole side of my leg there was red from that. And so I kind of washed the area off and put the insects somewhere else. But I had some tingling on my leg there for probably 2 or 3 days afterwards, and I'm relatively low in allergicness to other types of insect stings and stuff.
Well, I looked into this when, and they can be actually quite, especially if you're allergic to, you're allergic to bee stings, they're in that sort of
can
pain
go into
bracket.
Anaphylactic shock.
And it could just be uncomfortable, as you say,
right.
A bit of itching for a bit. But they can actually be painful. And so maybe if the swelling continues, go see the doctor.
Yeah, be aware of that. But because, for instance, in relationship to that, I get stung by a wasp and it will raise a welt for 15, 20 minutes, go back down, and within a half an hour after that, I usually can't tell where I was stung. So that's a very low reaction to a sting compared to many people.
It's probably a good job as you're an entomologist, right? That you don't want to be allergic to things. What is the strangest insect that you've come across in your garden?
One of the stranger insects that I've seen in my garden is another flower feeder, and it's called a tortoise beetle.
Mm-hmm.
Tortoise beetle is it's a little insect about an eighth of an inch to a quarter of an inch in diameter. I guess they tap out at about a quarter of an inch. And they're named tortoise beetle because they have a shield for a back. I mean, it's actually divided into two wing covers, elytra. But on their back, you have the outline of a turtle. It'll be brown in the center and brown legs, four of them going down each side.
Uh-huh.
But in between is the elytra and the pronotum of the outside shell of a beetle is golden. And it's very sun reflective.
Oh.
And so I've actually gone out into my flower garden and with the light happened to be in the right place, saw this shining gold spot on a plant, walked up to it and looked at it. And of course, if I go on the wrong side, it disappears. I go on the other side, it shows up again because you got to have the sun reflecting just right. And it's one of these things. And you can actually see these glisten from 30, 40, 50 feet away. I mean, they are
interesting.
It almost looks like it's kind of like if you go out in the morning and you see, and the dew is still on, mm-hmm. and you get the sun just right reflecting off that, and it looks like a lot of little sparkles coming up. Only this is a gold beam coming off of one of these beetles. And why it does this, I haven't a clue in the world, except maybe if something's going to come and feed on, it gets in the right place, it gets flashed with light, and then if it goes another direction, it kind of disappears in comparison, probably kind of like the morpho butterflies in the jungle where they have bright metallic, usually blue upper wings.
Mm-hmm.
The underwing is just a dark, drab, dull brown color. And so as they fly through jungle clearings, you get almost flashes like strobe lights going off. And then it disappears and comes on as they flap their wings. And my understanding is that it just makes it really hard for a bird that's trying to find one of these to eat it. First, they can't see the bug, and then they get blinded with a light, and then it's
right.
Then it's dark again, and then they show up somewhere else. It's almost like going out and seeing a firefly, and it shows up here, and it flashes, and then you miss it, and then over there a few feet away, it flashes again.
That sounds like hard work, trying to chase one of those.
Every child has to, though.
I've never actually caught one of those, but I understand that's a very common in the Midwest, is mm-hmm. to catch fireflies.
But not as neat as the ones that occur in Scotland that are synchronous.
Really?
They all flash at once. Thousands of them flash at once.
In Scotland?
In Scotland, parts of Scotland,
I believe. They don't
and
go
even
down
more,
to England?
Even more, I don't know if they get in parts of England or not, but even more more famous are the ones in Southeast Asia. I think there are some in Thailand and so on, in which they'll actually, along a river or something, the fireflies will actually synchronous flash and as like a wave going down across the trees. They're all sitting in the trees, and for like a half a mile or something, there'll just be a wave of light as one's flash and go off and the other's flash, and they all do it in synchrony.
Wow. That sounds beautiful.
I got to be kidding you, right? No, it's true.
I mean, that does sound wonderful. Have you actually seen those?
No, I haven't. I've seen videos of it.
Huh. Put it on your bucket list. Now, at this time of year, we're now in August. What would you say are the most prevalent and annoying insects or pests that gardeners are probably having to deal with right now?
Probably the biggest thing are white grubs in your lawn. This year, we've had a lot of rainfall in much of the Midwest,
mm-hmm.
and so we're not having near the problems we normally have. They tend to, this insect as an adult beetle, another scarab related to the green June beetle, several different scarabs actually, several different beetles, will lay their eggs. They tend to go to green, nice, moist areas to lay their eggs. And when you have a lot of rainfall like we've had in much of this year, this summer, then there's large areas that are green and they don't concentrate their egg laying in any one place. And so you have a few white grubs that are feeding on the roots of grasses everywhere, but you don't have a lot which is the secret. We normally have our worst problems during drought years, and they come into areas where people water their turf, such as golf courses and the mm-hmm. and the front yards of commercial buildings. And many homeowners want to have the greenest yard in town. And so they end up having the brownest yard in town because they attract all the beetles to lay their eggs unless they treat for them.
Now, we're going to put photographs of all these insects that we've talked about so that you can see what Cindy, Emily, and Marilyn were dealing with, so you can see if you've got them in your garden as well. We've run out of time, but I have one last question for you, Phil. If you were a bug, what would you be and why?
I would be a dragonfly. I really like dragonflies. I think they're neat. And they zip around. And another common name for a dragonfly is a mosquito hawk. They actually have long spines on the front of their legs, on the inside of their front legs, that they fold together and form a basket. And when they fly around and they see a little midge or a gnat or a mosquito, they'll fly up and catch it in the basket. And then if they land, many times you'll see a mosquito, a dragonfly dip its head downward and up and down and up. And what it's doing is it's taking care of that mosquito, killing it and then eating it. So they're
Phil would take care of business.
And then as an immature, you get to be a larva and spend your time in the water. So, you know, you can be an aquarist and then be an aerial acrobat, both in your same lifetime.
Wow. Now, so you're saying that dragonflies that don't sting, right?
Right.
They just look pretty.
Despite a common name of them being called the devil's darning needle.
Oh.
They do not sting.
So is it easy, can you sort of breed dragonflies to have in your garden to keep the mosquitoes away?
Well, it's a plus and a minus.
Oh.
To have more.
Too good to be true.
To have more dragonflies, mm-hmm. you need to have bodies of water. To produce the most amount of dragonfly immatures in that body of water, you would not do anything about, you would not have fish in it or anything, which will eat very small dragonfly nymphs. Larger dragonfly nymphs will eat very tiny hatchling fish. But the bottom line is that the fish in the body of water will eat the mosquito larvae that will help reduce the number of mosquitoes. So in other words, in one way of looking at it, the pessimistic way, you can look at it to say, to have more dragonflies to eat adult mosquitoes, you have to have produce more young mosquitoes that will produce more mosquitoes than the dragonflies can eat. How's
okay.
that for a corundum?
Wow. Okay. I'll perhaps stick with what I've got and use my spray. I thank you very much for coming in. I hope you had a good time.
Yeah, it was good.
Well, thank you to you, our listeners, for joining us for another episode of the Mid-American Gardener podcast. Mid-American Gardener is a production of Illinois Public Media. This episode was produced and hosted by me, Victoria Shepherd. Executive producer was Lisa Brotz. And if you have any gardening questions for future inclusion on either the TV show or podcast, email us at yourgarden@gmail.com, message us via Facebook, or call and leave a voicemail at 217-300-8224. Thanks again to Phil Nixon. I'll be back in a couple of weeks with another gardening whiz. Who knows? We might turn into a three-part bug series. Until then, have fun.